Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Curious Mind podcast. My name is Gabriel Ellis. I'm a psychologist, psychotherapist, and a Buddhist scholar. I'm interested in the philosophy of psychology. And in this episode, I want to further the dialogue between Hegel, who was a German philosopher of the early 19th century, and who was a philosopher of psychology and Buddhism. The topic that I've chosen today is the overlap in both teachings on the matter of non-self. And this is primarily a topic in Buddhism. And here I want to shed light on how and where we can find it also in the philosophy in Hegel and what it can teach us in our daily life. It will be a more abstract and fundamental discussion, but towards the end, I will try to give you some applications of this and why it matters when philosophers pick up and elucidate Buddhist concepts. To quickly summarize the Buddhist idea, the goal of Buddhism is complete liberation, a spiritual liberation. It has two important practical principles. One of them is ethics, which means the non-harm in thoughts, communication, and in actions. The second practical aspect is a temporary liberation of the mind in the deep meditation of the so-called samadhi. So these are the most important practical aspects of original Buddhism. There are also two metaphysical principles in original Buddhism. Here, the most important is the so-called impermanence principle, that all phenomena are impermanent. This, in the original Pali language, is called anicca. A second very important fundamental principle, metaphysical principle, is the teaching of not-self, in Pali, anatta. Now, sometimes this has been interpreted as the Buddha saying that there is no self, that there is no I. But in actuality, we don't find this teaching in the original Buddhist texts. What we find instead is that the Buddha points to certain categories of experience and tells us, this is not I, this is not self. I have gone, or I've dedicated at least a chapter in my PhD dissertation to this topic. I will give you a link below, and when you're interested in the details, you will find them there. To make it a little bit short, the majority of the ancient texts that have this as a subject, there the Buddha points out to five categories of experiences and tells us again and again, this is not self. What are these five? Those five are the body. So he tells us, you are not the body. You are not the feelings. You are not perceptions. You are not mental associations, anything that binds the mind together, for example, memory or intentions. And you are not even consciousness. Consciousness is not you. Consciousness is not the self. So this is, in very short terms, this is where the Buddha locates this principle. It's supposed to help us in our quest for liberation. It is a metaphysical aspect. And then there are some basic practices that are connected to that in the texts. But it has been notoriously difficult to interpret. And as I already mentioned, even in today's kind of interpretation of Buddhism, sometimes we mistake it as the Buddha categorically saying that there is no I, there is no self, which is not correct. In the texts, he mostly points to categories, as I mentioned, the five: you are not the body, you are not the feelings, you are not perceptions, you are not mental associations, and you are not consciousness. Now let's take a look at Hegel and his philosophy. Hegel was a so-called idealist. He tried to formulate, to find one principle out of which everything is emerging. This principle for Hegel is the spirit. Now, it is easy to misinterpret Hegel here, he doesn't mean the human spirit. For him, spirit is an overall source of everything. And the first emanation that emerges out of spirit is nature. So by this, you can already see that spirit for Hegel is not some mental or psychological category. It is something that goes even beyond nature. So for Hegel, the first emanation of the spirit is nature. The next step is the soul, or as we might call it today, the unconscious. The next one is consciousness. And then there is a series of further emanations until finally the spirit that has been there all along finds its self-understanding, its complete self-penetration, in complete freedom in the final step of self-realization. So in that sense, liberation is for Hegel the most important thing. And the I, the consciousness, we as humans, we are stuck somewhere on the path between being a natural phenomenon on the way to liberation, but not yet as the fully self-realized spirit. Now, in this path, one of the first stages where consciousness emerges from the soul is something that is called in German Anschauung, and which I would loosely translate as the level of viewing. This is where the first conscious impressions, the first conscious sensations appear. As I said, this is at the beginning of consciousness, and a necessary aspect here is attention. What happens at this first level of consciousness is that what has been implicit in the soul, in the unconscious, is being thrown out into the realm of consciousness, and it has connected with, it's held together by a, if you like, a cord or a string of attention. So something is thrown out, and then I view it, hence the level of viewing, I view it with a cord of attention. And here is already a surprising, but also a very self-evident aspect of not self, that everyone who has tried to attempt meditation knows. What happens is we close our eyes, we try to focus on something, which means we try to apply attention to, or mindfulness, if you will, to a meditation object, for example, like the breath, and then we get distracted. And here I have a quote from Hegel that describes exactly that at the very base of the formation of consciousness, where he already locates an aspect of not self. I read now a loose translation of myself from paragraph 447 of Hegel's Encyclopedia of Philosophy. So this, my loose translation goes as this: attention requires an effort. When a person wants to grasp one object, they have to abstract from everything else, from the thousand things moving in their head, from the other interests, even from their own person. They have to suppress their vanity, which hastily judges. In order to do that, they must rigidly immerse themselves in the matter without delving into reflections. So here, I think it's a pretty good description of what happens when beginners or intermediate meditators sit down to meditate. The thoughts come to their mind, memories, hopes, expectations, wishes, comments, and so on. Or we can call it, in short, the self, the person. Many of the aspects that constitute me as a person try to distract me from paying attention to the meditation object. So in order to bring up any kind of attention to an object, what I actually have to do is to practice not self. I have to push all the self aspects that inevitably try to corrupt my attention. I have to push them to the side in order to focus on one object. The second aspect where not self comes in with Hegel is his understanding of feelings. Feelings also are the one some of the first emanations of consciousness. In fact, a large part of feelings still lies in the soul, in the unconscious. And the problem in that for Hegel is that they are too close to circumstances, to random circumstances that trigger those feelings. Again, keep in mind that for Hegel, the spirit is complete freedom. And complete freedom means also complete freedom from outside circumstances. So feelings that are in the first stages immediately triggered by something that happens outside, by the weather, by somebody saying something, by my family, by language, by society, by work, by my physical constitution, all of this triggers feelings. And because feelings are so easy to be triggered, mechanically triggered, they are far away yet from the self-realizing, completely free, completely self-determining spirit. So in that sense, for Hegel, feelings are not self, or as we can more accurately say, feelings are not the spirit. Feelings are at the beginning of personhood, and even more than the thinking mind, the understanding mind, even more than them, feelings are far away from the self-realizing, liberated spirit. So here again, just in a phenomenon of feelings, we have an application of not-self in the teachings of Hegel. As a last example that I want to bring, let's look at how Hegel understands the spirit itself. As I mentioned, for Hegel, the spirit is absolute freedom. So is the I, is the soul for Hegel a reflection of the spirit? Yes, but only as a root. It is not fully realized yet. The I, the unconscious, and the consciousness, they're all just transitory states of the implicit spirit to self-realize itself. In other words, coming from nature, where the spirit is completely implicit, the spirit is creating the soul, the I, and consciousness in order to understand itself. And on the later stages, it develops more and more degrees of freedom until it is finally completely free from circumstances, until it is completely predetermined. So in that sense, everything that happens in consciousness is not spirit, is not the fully realized liberation. Everything that is in consciousness, everything that is the unconsciousness, anything that we can legitimately call I in a convenient or even developed way cannot be taken as a legitimate definition of the free spirit. So, and this is the third aspect that I want to bring, where in the teachings of Hegel, there is a strong application of a non-self, not self teaching. Now, does that mean that the Buddha would subscribe to Hegel's view on the spirit and not self? Probably not. I think if we look at the conceptual level, Hegel is closer to the old Indian monism or Advaita teachings. But nonetheless, there are so many similarities here that I think it's fair enough to draw those similarities between Hegel's non-self and to map them out on the Buddhist not-self. So how is that relevant to us? It is relevant in that Hegel's philosophy is very detailed. It is difficult to comprehend, but if you're interested in details, you don't have to pick up the original texts. In translation, you can find interpretations of his philosophy of consciousness and his philosophy of spirit. The detail in which Hegel goes, where he develops his steps and layers of the spirit on its path to self-realization, are much more detailed than the teachings of Buddhism. If we look at the textual basis of the Buddhist texts, and we don't want to rely on living teachers today who gives us their interpretation of the texts. The Buddhist texts are very repetitive, but unfortunately, they are more inspirational as they are super detailed on the higher levels of meditation and Buddhist metaphysics. And here is where Hegel and his teachings helps us. He shows us that in contrast to the Buddhist texts, which bring in the not-self teaching on a very advanced level, and sometimes even close to liberation only, Hegel shows us that actually in very mundane phenomena, such as attention and concentration, already there is a necessary aspect, there is a necessary part of not-self included. So whenever we already attempt to meditate, even though we are not aware of it, what we're actually doing is to practice not-self. Equally, Hegel helps us to understand that one integral part in the function and the efficiency of psychotherapy, meaning where we work with our feelings and we try to integrate them into our personality, and we try to free ourselves from the impact of negative feelings on our well-being. What we're actually doing is again to apply an aspect of not-self to psychology, to our own mundane mind. And this is another example for showing that the fundamental aspect of Buddhism, of not-self, is not only relevant for high fancy spirituality, for philosophy, for high concepts and abstract considerations. No, it is working already in therapy. So when we concentrate, we apply not-self. Whenever we work in therapy or therapeutic paths on our emotions, trying to understand them, trying to integrate them, we are applying not-self. And here, I think we can use Hegel to understand how fundamental aspects of Buddhism are not only helpful in aspiration and philosophy and in high meditation, but they are equally already functional on mundane levels of the mind. So they describe actually fundamental aspects of mental development, not just high spiritual aspects. Well, this is it for today. I hope you found it interesting. Please let me know if you have specific questions for the topic that I had today. I understand that it's quite abstract, both on the Hegel part and the Buddhist part. I will try to answer those questions in the following content. Thank you for your attention. Goodbye.